This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Later this hour, we're joined by local author and Florida Southwestern State College English professor Marty Ambrose to discuss her latest novel, Claire's Last Secret, which explores the summer of 1816 when Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein and when four tempestuous lives came together. But first, with the November general election now less than 3 weeks away, our midterm election coverage continues today in a conversation with Democratic congressional candidate David Holden. Holden won the August Democratic primary in August and is now vying to replace incumbent Republican U.S. Representative Francis Rooney to represent Florida's 19th congressional district. The district covers a large coastal portion of Lee and Collier counties and includes Fort Myers, Fort Myers Beach, Cape Coral, Estero, Bonita Springs, Naples, and Marco Island. David Holden joins me now live in studio for a closer look at his background and qualifications, as well as his positions on a broad range of key issues, including water quality and the environment, healthcare, education, firearm regulations, human rights, and more. David Holden, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thanks, John. Great to be here.
And as always, we invite our listeners to join the conversation. If you have a question for the Democratic candidate vying to represent you in Congress, give us a call. Phone lines are open at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. And to start off, I just wanted to talk about your past political experience. I know you previously served as chair for the City Democratic Committee in White Plains, New York, but that's quite a big leap from that to now saying, I want to run for Congress. So what prompted you to decide to run for Congress now?
So I do have some political experience in the past. My parents, Harvey and Nikki, were very active when I was growing up in the civil rights and environmental movements. So I grew up in that sort of home where giving back and getting involved was just what we did. And I was attracted early to politics and history. I found it fascinating. I got involved I first knocked on doors when I was about 11 years old with a local candidate. But I also was interested in policy. So after serving as chair of the Democratic Party in White Plains and helping to move a city from a red political environment to what continues to be pretty blue, I got more involved in policy, ended up working in mental health policy in California after graduate school, but I've always been involved in the community as either a volunteer or a leader in a nonprofit.
Yeah, also working with the United Way of Greater, again, White Plains, New York.
That's right.
So it seems like public service has sort of always run parallel with whatever career path you're
yes,
doing.
Yes, absolutely.
Tell me about your educational background and perhaps how that's led to your current career as a financial mm-hmm. advisor.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting path. So my undergraduate was at Temple University in Philadelphia, where my dad grew up. He also is an alum of was an alum of Temple, and a great university and a great city. And I ended up recruited by my wife, Streeter Holden, to her practice. She started our financial planning practice 16 years ago, and I had been working in mental health policy in California, where we lived. And she'd been looking for a partner, and after 5 years of unsuccessfully looking, she turned to me one day over coffee and said, I think I found my partner. And I said, oh, great. Who? And she said, you. And that's been wonderful. It's been wonderful for us. I've really enjoyed and been challenged by going through the process of learning about financial markets, getting licensed as a professional, but also having an opportunity to work with families and individuals to help them, you know, invest and save for their futures.
Do you think a skill set there with, you know, financial advising and planning that sort of translates to public office?
I hope so, because, you know, the core of what we do is planning. So we create a financial plan for our clients that's really a roadmap. It's a living document for their finances, their aspirations, their hopes, building in protections for what they are investing in and providing options for dealing with unexpected circumstances. So that pretty much describes, I think, how good policy is made in the government. You've got to look at the resources you have. You've got to make challenging and difficult decisions about how to deploy them. And you got to be prepared for the unexpected.
And before we dip into the nuts and bolts of platform policy here, just what motivated you to drop anchor here in Southwest Florida?
We came here like many, many, many of our neighbors because of family. My wife's parents have been in the Naples area for 25 years. And I started spending time here a dozen years ago when I met my wife and fell in love with her and then fell in love with the area, visiting her folks. And it was just clear we needed to be closer to family. So we made the move, and it's been one of the best things we've ever done for our family.
All right. Well, we're already getting a number of calls, so I'm going to go ahead and jump to the phones now. And we're going to hear from Jennifer on Sanibel. Jennifer, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Hi, thank you, and good afternoon, and hello to David.
Hi, Jennifer. Hi.
So I live on Sanibel Island. Like you, I started coming down here years ago, maybe 30, 35 years ago, and I'm an attorney now on the island. And like you, my biggest concern is the health of the Florida environment and how red tide, blue algae, the endless, now kind of climate-related level hurricanes are, you know, not just destroying our marine life and so many of our small businesses, but it's reached such a state that we can no longer say the Florida economy, at least on this side of the state, is doing well. Rooney has been at best lukewarm on these issues. You know, he hasn't taken strong stance. And I'm wondering, David, how you would teach and encourage our voters to understand that for those that aren't just concerned about the environment, that it's actually an economic issue as well.
Jennifer, you just gave my stump speech. Thank you. You're exactly spot on. In Southwest Florida, the environment is the economy. And, you know, I came here, my family came here, thousands and thousands of us came here because of the quality of life that's possible here with the beauty of our beaches and all the things that come with that. If we lose that, then our economy is going to be under great stress, and it already is. The winter season may get most of the attention, but there is a summer tour season as well that just simply did not happen this year because of the combination of the red tide and the toxic algae blooms. And we don't have, you know, we in Florida have squandered 20 years in dealing with this problem, and we don't have any more time to waste. So it is not, it's all of these problems are challenging. We need to start where we can make the biggest impact. And in my view, that is to buy the land and send the water south from Lake Okeechobee through the Everglades as nature intended. That will take tremendous pressure off of releases through the Caloosahatchee and give us some breathing room. That's not going to happen overnight, but that's the centerpiece of the path forward.
All right. And, you know, on that same topic, David, you've criticized your opponent, you know, kind of saying he's greenwashing his environmental record. You know, but I have to note he recently voted in favor of the Water Resources Development Act, subsequently passed by the Senate, which is, you know, key to, you know, securing what we need for the Everglades Agricultural Area Reservoir and, of course, other projects related to the Central Everglades Restoration Plan. And he's brought down colleagues in Washington, you know, like GOP Majority Leader Ken McCarthy, Chair of Appropriations for the Interior Department, Ken Calvert. So I'm wondering, you know, where you think Rooney perhaps has fallen short or what you would do differently.
Well, I think he has opened his eyes to the reality of what we're facing, and I welcome him to the conversation. But you have to look at his record rather than his rhetoric. He's received a zero rating from the League of Conservation Voters. He's the only Republican in the Florida delegation to have a zero. You got to work to get a zero. He's voted to slash the EPA's budget. He has voted consistently to roll back critical environmental regulations. You know, flying big shots over the Everglades in a helicopter is not an environmental policy in my view. We've been endorsed by the National Sierra Club because we've been paying attention to this issue from the beginning of this campaign. And I think the voters know the difference between what's really going on and the rhetoric that they're hearing.
I'm going to go ahead now and bring another caller into the conversation. This is Pamela from Golden Gate Estates. Pamela, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. You're on the air.
Oh, Oh, thank you. And I was online last night, and I've been trying to see forums. You know, I want to compare and contrast the candidates. I want to hear what they have to say. But I there was a Facebook Live one last night, but I didn't see, what's his name, Francis Rooney? Is that mm-hmm. David running against? So my question is I couldn't find any forums where the two of you were able to talk out the issues. Do you have any planned in the future? I'd love to see them.
We have asked for 6 debates. Congressman Rooney has declined all of them. He has stated he will not debate me, and I think that is unfortunate, not just for the voters of the 19th District, but for Mr. Rooney, because the importance of the debates is not so much for the candidates to talk. It's for the candidates to listen to the concerns of the community. And without that conversation, without that ability to, as you said, Pamela, compare and contrast where the candidates stand, makes it much harder for folks to make an informed decision. And I continue to hope that Mr. Rooney will change his mind and meet me in debate.
Pamela, thanks so much for the call. Also, just want to note that Congressman Rooney has a standing invitation to come on our program as well. If you're just joining our show today, we're sitting down in studio with Democratic congressional candidate for Florida's 19th congressional district, David Holden. And of course, listeners can join the conversation. Call 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. While we're on the subject of environmental issues, I wanted to talk about climate change. Just this week in particular, it's been in the news. The United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change released a landmark report just over a week ago, painting a far more dire picture of the immediate consequences of climate change than what had, you know, been previously thought. What is your take on issues like climate change, the Paris Climate Accord, and what members of Congress should be doing?
Mm-hmm. So I've read that report, and it is terrifying is the only way to put it. Things are bleak, and they're not going to get better unless we address the reality that climate change is real. We are the only country not in the Paris Climate Accord. Congressman Rooney agreed with the decision of this administration to pull us out of that accord. I think that is a terrible mistake. I would urge the administration to rejoin that accord. But I also think we have to get to a place where we can work across party boundaries to solve these problems. If you look at some of the great strides that we've made in this country in the last 50 years, both the civil rights movement and the environmental movement of the 70s, those were bipartisan. The Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, the establishment of the Environmental Protection Agency, all signed into law by Republican President Richard Nixon. And we have to start getting there again. So one of the things we've been talking about throughout this campaign is the need to work across party boundaries to get things done. And that will be at the very top of my agenda, of my efforts as a member of Congress.
And also in the environmental realm, you know, just this week we saw researchers with Florida Atlantic University's Harbor Branch Oceanographic Institute here in Fort Myers collecting blood, urine, and nasal swabs from residents here, you know, testing for microcystins, biological markers of toxins, poisons from blue-green algae exposure. You know, those have been related to, you know, serious issues like neurodegenerative diseases. And this effort is being funded through social media crowdsourcing. Should the federal government be playing a greater role in funding this kind of research?
Absolutely. We need to be doing a lot more research on our environment in general. And as someone said to me, if you can't eat it or extract it, we don't study it. When it comes to our oceans and waterways. And we need to have a better understanding. Yes, we know both red tide and algae blooms are naturally occurring, but that's not remotely the whole story. We know that they are fed by both temperature rises and nutrient loads, but we just don't have enough information. And we need to be investing at the federal, state, and local level in that kind of science.
All right. I'm going to take another call now from Teresa. Teresa joins us from Naples. Teresa, you're on the air. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thanks so much. I really wanted to ask David Holden the question that burns in my heart all the time, is how divided we are and what can be done. I heard him talk about working on nonpartisanship, and I see that that's a course of action to take, but really, what can be done and what can he do?
Thanks for the question, Teresa. I think it goes to the heart of what the challenges are that we face as a nation and as a community. And as I said earlier, we've gotten away from our ability to work well together to accomplish things. I mean, we have critical challenges in not just environment, but healthcare, education, jobs, infrastructure. The list goes on and on. I think we start with two things that may sound old-fashioned, but I believe will serve us. The first is listening to each other, and the second is to treat each other with respect. I have very different perspectives and disagree with Congressman Rooney on a number of issues, but I hold him in great respect. I know his devotion to his family, to his faith, and to his country, and I don't question those things. We have differences on policy, and we should have differences, and we should debate those points of view vigorously. But we also need to spend more time finding the common ground that I know we share.
And I wanted to turn our attention a little bit towards healthcare. Would it be fair to broadly characterize your position on healthcare by saying that you believe access to care is a right?
I believe healthcare is a right in the richest country of the world for every American and not a privilege. When someone's in a ditch and they want to get out of the ditch, the first thing you do is stop digging. So I would say we need to stop trying to destroy the Affordable Care Act. It is by far imperfect, but it has provided millions of Americans and thousands of Southwest Floridians with access to quality health care. And we simply can't go backwards. And here is a policy that Congressman Rooney and I disagree. He said in his 2016 campaign that job one was dismantling the Affordable Care Act. Well, they've come close, but they haven't fully succeeded. And I want to ensure that we do not succeed in that effort. And they're talking now about bringing pre-existing conditions back as a way to deny people health coverage. And that is absolutely unacceptable to me, and I believe and I know to the American people. But we need to go further ultimately. And there isn't a magic bullet that's going to solve the healthcare problem right away. I support Senator Tim Kaine's Medicare X program, which would allow people to buy into the same sort of coverage that government employees have access to while still preserving the private sector for folks who are happy with the coverage that they have. And I think that is a huge step in the right direction.
On the subject of the Affordable Care Act, since its inception, open enrollment is going to be starting on November, and we're going to see the lowest premium increases this year since the program's inception. As you've noted, Floridians have really led the nation in the number of folks who are taking advantage of the opportunity to get plans through the federal marketplace. Do you see this as a sign that Obamacare is stabilizing, the marketplace is stabilizing?
I sure hope so. We've got to take it a year at a time. I think efforts to destroy the Affordable Care Act have failed thus far, but there are many, it can be death of a thousand cuts. I want to make sure that Americans have access to quality health care. I'm very concerned about some of these policies, healthcare policies that are being proposed that don't really meet the standards of the Affordable Care Act. One of the things that I will be paying close attention to in Washington is ensuring that the administration follows the law as it is.
All right. I'm going to take a call now from Alex in Naples. Alex has been waiting patiently, so thank you so much for that. And welcome to Gulf Coast Live, Alex.
Hi, thank you for having me. Hi, David.
Hi, Alex. How are you?
I'm doing well. I just wanted to say congratulations on your campaign so far. It's been a hell of a one. I come from more of a Republican background, libertarian background, and I do appreciate a lot of the efforts Rooney has done and a lot of the legislation he's gotten through Congress. However, if I were to be voting today, I say I would lean more towards voting for you, especially because Rooney's completely disregarded your call for debate. And I think it's important that we have these civil discussions to hash out our differences in policy because you're right. That's the only way we can get past this political polarization. It's by communicating with each other, not by running and hiding.
Yes, I agree. And you and I have gotten to know each other over the course of this campaign. You've come to a number of town halls. Your questions are always thought-provoking. and challenging, and I appreciate that. And I think we've gotten to at least appreciate each other's perspective over the course of that conversation. And I think that could happen as well if Mr. Rooney would meet with me and debate.
Thanks so much for the call, Alex. Appreciate it.
Anytime.
And, you know, while we're on the subject of, you know, healthcare, of course, open enrollment for Medicare began on Monday. That's, of course, going to be on the minds of a lot of folks right now, namely seniors. And now we have Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell saying the only way to lower the record high federal deficit would be to cut programs like Medicare, like Medicaid, Social Security. Just your take on moving in this direction.
Well, it's the same old shell game. We've seen this. This is the third time that we've passed these massive tax bills that purport to relieve working families and middle-class families from tax burdens, but are actually a massive transfer of wealth upwards, not to the affluent, but to the 1% of the 1%. And then after these bills are passed with no regard for the impact on the deficit, then they come back the next year or a few months later and say, okay, we have to cut social safety programs to pay down the deficit. There has to be some consistency. To be as vigorously opposed to deficits as the Republican Party is always when there's a Democrat in the White House and yet ignore them completely when there's a Republican in the White House, that's hypocrisy. And I care about deficits and I care about our budget. I'm a capitalist. I work in the marketplace, so I'm attuned to how our economy works, and I think deficits matter no matter who's in the White House. We are not going to cut these critical social safety net programs, and people like to use the word entitlement in a negative way, but for folks who have paid into Social Security for their entire working lives, that's not an entitlement. That's something they've earned, and I will be working every day to preserve that program. I've been endorsed by the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. They put me through a vigorous screening, and I think they understand my position and I understand theirs, that preserving Social Security and Medicare has got to be a top priority for the next Congress.
All right. I'm going to go back to the phones again. We're going to bring on Joseph from Cape Coral, and I believe his question is going to take us back to environmental issues here. Joseph, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'm a retired experienced public health scientist, and I have worked on ocean pollution problems. But what you have here now is a public health crisis. There's much talk about doing a study. There's a study we're going to hear sometime in the future about the effects of airborne algae. And does it cause a problem? That study was done. Anyone who's doing it now is covering up and waiting for a different answer. If you go to the National Institute of Health, that's the USA National Institute of Health, NIH website, you'll find the study. It was completed, I think, 2011, and it's conclusive. They say at least 2 miles inland, the air is dangerous from the algae. And if it's a public health emergency, you don't have to talk about 10-year plan to build another reservoir. You just stop putting nutrients into the Caloosahatchee that's going out onto Fort Myers Beach, Sanibel. So besides being an environmental catastrophe, we have a dead zone. It's clear outside here. I live in Southwest Florida. I look down the water. There's nothing alive there. So I bicycle every morning 20 miles, and I don't see any seabirds anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm bicycling along the Western Canal. So I don't see the problem in taking action now.
I couldn't agree more, Joseph. I think action is indicated and urgent. I look forward to seeing that report myself. I have not yet seen it, but you know, I live here, and I breathe the air, and I know the effects that I'm experiencing, and I know that from my conversation with, you know, literally thousands of folks in the Southwest Florida area, that what they're experiencing. So, you know, you couldn't be more right about the urgency of the issue.
Yeah, just to piggyback on what Joseph was saying, I believe he was referring to some air water or air quality testing that began recently, and this was again related to how far inland the red tide toxins have been impacting folks. And I think they had said they'd proven as far as 2 miles in, but anecdotally people were reporting symptoms much further inland. So, of course, WGCU will be reporting on those results as we get that information as well. Turning back to healthcare for a moment, you've had a lot to say on the campaign trail about prescription drug prices and the pharmaceutical industry more generally. Enlighten our listeners on your perspective there.
Well, they're too high. and they're not this high in virtually any other industrialized country in the world. And so there's, you know, there's a reason for that. We have allowed not just the prescription, the big pharma companies to dictate much government policy, but we've done that across the board. And I think this touches on another issue. So let me, before I move off of it, reducing drug prices for Americans is a priority, and we can do it because other countries have successfully done it. But there's an issue underlying this and underlying a lot of the issues that we're talking about, and that's the corruption in our system of campaign finance. We have since the certainly since the Citizens United decision in 2010 seen an incredible explosion of dark, untraceable money, billions and billions of dollars spent to buy elections. And that's simply not consistent with representative democracy. And until we address those issues, until we address the three – there's three pieces to the corruption pie. The first is the dark money flooding the system of campaign elections. The second is the billions of dollars spent on lobbying in Washington and in state capitals. And then the third piece is partisan gerrymandering. And we can and must address all three of those if we want to return some balance to our democracy.
And, you know, you've talked in the past about, you know, working to improve the business climate here in Southwest Florida, particularly for small businesses. And I'm curious as to your ideas in that department. I mean, of course, fixing some of the environmental issues is going to help to a degree. And as much as our local economy is dependent on tourism, it's certainly not everything.
That's right. And we know that most jobs are created by small and medium businesses. And that we want to encourage them. We want to make sure that regulatory burdens are as light as possible for small businesses. We want to give small businesses every chance of success. And I think there is a collaboration between federal, state, and local levels of government that can help move that forward.
WGCU's midterm election coverage continues today as we sit down in studio with Democrat David Holden. He's vying to represent Florida's 19th congressional district here in Southwest Florida. If you'd like to add your voice to our discussion and ask a question, give us a call now. Phone lines are open at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. And I wanted to move on to the topic of education. You know, one of the issues that you've supported is the idea of it's a living wage for teachers, for educators. And, you know, as I'm sure you know, here in Florida, we've fallen consistently below the national average when it comes to pay for teachers. I guess what would you like to see happen there? What can you do in Congress?
Well, I'm a strong supporter of public education. And one of the ways to guarantee that we have better public education is to make sure that we can attract the best teachers available. And so we have to offer them a competitive wage, and Florida has not been doing that. Now, that may be more of a state issue, but I think the federal government has vast – I know they have vast responsibilities in the education area, and you know, we can set policies and we can set priorities and provide funding to make sure that states are meeting the standard that they need to.
Also, there's been a push not just here in Florida but nationally in recent years toward allocating more taxpayer resources toward private education and charter schools, you know, often billed as school choice. Is that a trend that you would perhaps want to reverse in Congress?
I am very concerned with defunding of public education. And, you know, if you want to see how not to do it, then just look no further than Florida and Tallahassee. I believe we are – going to be transferring $1 billion in public money, that's tax money that you and I listeners pay, from public education to to charter schools, and much of that going to for-profit charter schools. These schools don't meet the same standards as public schools. They don't have the same level of accountability as public schools, and I'm very concerned that we are not treating our public schools, which educate the vast majority of our students, properly.
Right. And, you know, of course, with education and education access, you can also turn that towards higher education. Mm-hmm. What would you like to do in Congress to increase access to those who want to seek higher education?
Well, there's two things. One is I want to find a way, and we can find a way, to lower the debt burden on our students. I know many of the students at FGCU, where I've spent a fair amount of time over the course of this campaign, and many of my best supporters are here as students. They come out of school with a tremendous amount of debt, and I don't think that that is good for them. I know it's not good for them, and I don't think it's good for the country. But there's another piece of this, which is we need to do a much better job on vocational training. I want every student who graduates from high school to be career ready, and that is not always college. We are not doing the kind of job that other countries do or that we have done in the past in helping students pick non-college career paths.
All right. Well, we're going to come back to this conversation in just a moment, just after a break. We're just going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with David Holden, Democratic candidate for Florida's Congressional District 19. Stay with us. You're listening to Gulf Coast Live on WGCU. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. With the general election now less than 3 weeks away, we're continuing our midterm coverage during today's conversation with Democratic congressional candidate David Holden. He joins us in studio after winning the August Democratic primary and is now vying to replace incumbent Republican U.S. Representative Francis Rooney to represent Florida's 19th congressional district. Again, this district covers a largely coastal portion of Lee and Collier counties and includes Fort Myers, Fort Myers Beach, Cape Coral, Estero, Bonita Springs, Naples, and Marco Island. And, of course, listeners can always join our conversation. If you'd like to ask a question or bring your voice into the conversation, phone lines are open at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. And just want to reiterate again, our invitation to Congressman Rooney to come on the show on a later date does remain open. And David Holden, I thank you again for sticking around for the remainder of the hour.
Happy to be here, John.
Well, where we left off, we were talking about education, and I kind of like to move to an issue that sadly has become inextricably linked to education, and that's gun violence. What positions do you support or would you advocate for in Congress related to school safety and gun violence?
It's been one of the top issues for me and certainly for the community, not just because of the tragedy of Parkland, but just the path that seems to be being pursued with guns and violence in our society. So I'm a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. I was trained in firearm usage and safety by NRA-trained instructors when I was a Boy Scout, and my family was grateful that I had that training. But I also know that as a supporter of the Second Amendment, I want to see a reduction in gun violence and an increase in gun safety. And there are ways that we can do that. I have worked with Moms Demand Action, which is a nationwide organization of over 4 million people who support the Second Amendment but agree that we can do better on gun violence.
Now, as I'm sure you're aware, after the Parkland mass shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School, the state legislature responded, and one of the bills that they passed really required public schools in Florida to do a lot more to really up the law enforcement presence mm-hmm. to try and increase security. Just earlier in this week, I had the Lee County Superintendent of Schools on this program, and one of the things that we discussed is how that, you know, was well intended, but in a way was kind of an unfunded mandate. School districts have had to get real creative in finding ways to fund these, in more safety measures to keep kids safe in schools so they can focus on their work. And I'm wondering, you know, if you see like any opportunity for federal money to help shore up schools in the event that you were not able to see the types of things passed on a federal level that you would support in terms of gun reforms.
Schools need to be safe and secure, but I don't want teachers armed and I don't want schools turned into fortresses. Schools should be a place of learning and joy for students and for teachers and staff alike. There are many other ways to approach this problem than the one that is laid out in that legislation. I think it is a very small step forward.
All right. What about any specific measures related to gun reforms that you would maybe advocate for, maybe when it comes to, you know, weapons with high-capacity magazines, mm-hmm. assault-style weapons?
Yes, there are several things. First, we want to make sure that we close all of the loopholes on background checks. We want to make sure that the CDC can not just research the effects of gun violence on individuals and communities, but make science-based recommendations on how to reduce those effects. And we need to reinstitute the assault weapons ban. Military-grade weapons have one purpose and one purpose only. That's to kill as many people as quickly and violently as possible. They have no place in hunting or in sports, and they should be only in the hands of trained military or police personnel.
And, you know, advocates for greater gun control measures regularly criticize politicians in Washington for what they see as, you know, a dearth of political will to take steps to address these gun violence issues. How can you see yourself perhaps working across the aisle to address gun violence and firearm regulations when you have such powerful lobbying interests like the NRA?
Well, we touched briefly on trying to reduce the influence of paid lobbying in Washington. The NRA has been one of the most successful political movements of the last 25 years, and they have done that based on money and fear. But if you had told me or virtually anyone else a year and a half ago that Governor Rick Scott was going to sign some sort of gun violence measure, nobody would have believed you. So I think the students at Parkland who have started this incredible movement have shown the way forward. People want change. They want children to be safe in their classroom and in their community, and they want to feel safe. And so I think that there's an opportunity to move the conversation forward. I know many Republicans who care as much about this issue as any Democrat does. I've talked to them in my own life and at the many town halls that we've held across this district. So I think there's an opportunity for a conversation to be had there.
WGCU's midterm election coverage continues today as we're sitting down with Democrat David Holden. He's vying to represent Florida's 19th congressional district here in Southwest Florida. And if you'd like to add your voice to our discussion, phone lines are open. Again, the number is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. And I wanted to go on to the human rights issue, too, because you've made that one of your main platform issues, more specifically women's rights. And then we can talk more broadly about other groups as well. But I guess what do you see as issues as far as women's rights? Is it mostly related to like equality, the Me Too movement, the gender pay gap?
You know, all of those things. I want everyone to have the same rights before the law, regardless of gender or nationality or sexual orientation or personal choices for how they live their life. And I think that that is something shared by the vast majority of Americans. Now, things have been polarized and political perspectives have been sharpened. But I just, you know, I believe in justice and fairness for all. I also support a woman's right to make her own healthcare decisions, just as I get to make as a man. And I also support equality for the LGBT community. That's very important to me and very important to this campaign.
And your human rights stance also seems sort of inextricably linked with immigration policy as well and what we've seen happen in recent years. Can we talk just a little bit about your views on immigration and immigration reform?
Absolutely. I was in a room yesterday morning with perhaps 200 retired men, and the issue of immigration comes up. And I ask the question, as I do whenever it comes up in town halls or conversations, are there any folks in the room with Native American heritage? And sometimes people put their hands up, but yesterday no one did. So clearly we are all immigrants at some point in our family history. And in my family, my grandparents on my father's side are immigrants, and on my mother's side, it's a generation or two further back. But we all came to this country for opportunity and freedom. And the immigrants in this community in particular are critically important, not just to our economy. It's not just about the taxes they pay and the work that they contribute. It's about the cultural diversity and the richness that they bring to the life that we all share here. Having said that, we need comprehensive immigration reform, and we have done it in the past. And again, I go back to a bipartisan approach to solving problems. In 1986, Republican President Ronald Reagan signed a bipartisan comprehensive immigration law into being, and we need to get back there. We came close a number of years ago. It failed for a variety of reasons, but it's critically important that we do that.
And as far as the human rights issue, as far as, you know, separation of families at the border. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So my father fought a world war with millions of others to stop a government from tearing children from their parents and throwing them into cages. And we are simply not going to do that. It is a violation of human rights, and it is a violation of the American way of life.
Let's talk about temporary protected status, which had been slated to end for Haitians in the U.S. In next July. That's currently in sort of a legal limbo right now for those folks. But I bring that up because, according to the Center for Migration Studies, the majority of Haitians living here under TPS are in Florida, some 32,500 people. That includes nearly 3,000 living just in Lee and Collier counties alone. And of those under TPS here in Florida, they've had an estimated 18,800 children since they've come here under TPS. So these are, you know, children born in the U.S., American-born citizens. And this doesn't even, you know, really begin to address TPS holders from other countries as well. And just since that's been such a hot-button issue, what would you like to see done in Congress related to the issue of temporary protected status?
Well, the ending of the TPS program is a terribly misguided decision. It is one man's whim being put into action. That man happens to be the President of the United States. But we simply cannot allow this to stand. I spend these days almost every weekend, I spend part of my time in the Haitian community. I've spent time in Haiti on a medical mission in 2010, and I have gotten to know and love and respect the Haitian people and what the Haitian community in particular contributes in Southwest Florida. We cannot simply rip families apart. We cannot uproot lives. There are businesses that have been built, homes that have been built, lives that have been built and enriched all of our lives here in Southwest Florida. And we have to stand by our brothers and sisters in the Haitian community.
And as far as building a wall on the U.S.-Mexico border, of course, we know that's a priority for the Trump administration. What's your take on this idea as a tool for immigration policy or for controlling our borders?
Francis Rooney described the wall in one interview as a metaphor. I call it a terribly misguided idea. We have strong border security. Does it need to be strengthened? I believe that it does. But building a wall is simply not the way to do it.
Terribly expensive metaphor.
Yes, indeed.
Let's go ahead and take a call from Thomas in Port Charlotte. Thomas, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you very much. I just wanted to say that Mr. Holden sounds 100% accurate as far as I am concerned. Very, very good explanation of his ideas. And I wanted to ask him a couple of questions. Number one, how do you feel about the Electoral College and eliminating it? And number two, how about presidential election reform?
Thomas, thanks. I think the Electoral College has probably outlived its usefulness. There are very few countries where the person with the most votes doesn't get to take the office that they are running for. And we've had a string of elections that have ended up with the person with less votes being placed into office. Having said that, that's the system that we have. And once that decision is finalized, then you know, whether we agreed with it or not, that person is our president. I think it's time to look at reforming the Electoral College. I would certainly consider supporting an end to the Electoral College and just have majority vote. And the reform that I am looking for in all of our elections is to pull the dark money out of the system. We have raised money by individuals in amounts from $3 and up, from people, you know, across the country who believe that we offer something of value in leadership to this community. But there are simply too many elections that are deluged with money from sources that we simply can't trace.
Thomas, thanks so much for the call and the question. I'm going to go back to the phones and take another call from Terry in Cape Coral. Terry, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. You're on the air.
Well, thank you. First of all, I want to say, Mr. Holden, you're doing a great job. I've been following you on Facebook, and I'm just highly impressed how you're meeting everybody and trying to answer questions. My question is the lack of a civic debate and how Republican office holders can refuse to debate their primary opponent. I think there needs to be some sort of, I don't know if it's a rule or a law, that if you're an elected official and in the next term you're up, you should be able, you should have to debate to maintain your position. I also wrote an email to the news press because I feel if Mr. Rooney does not want to debate you, he shouldn't have the right to sit before the editorial board and have a free say about what he thinks happens without having a dialogue with you. And I'm really disappointed in really his cowardness to debate you.
Well, thank you. I'm disappointed as well. I think it does a disservice to the voters, and I think it does a disservice, in fact, to Mr. Rooney himself. But let's be clear. We've got a terrific slate of Democrats running for state legislative seats across the 19th district, and most of the Republican incumbents are debating their challengers, and I think that's a wonderful thing. It's Mr. Rooney who is unwilling to meet, so I continue to put forward the offer to meet with him anywhere, anytime, to have a conversation about the issues that face this district. I think he and I may have more common ground than he believes, but I also think we have an opportunity to share our different perspectives on solving the problems that we face.
Thanks for the call, Terry. And we've got one more caller on the line at the moment. This is Don in Fort Myers. Don, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. You're on the air.
Well, thank you very much. And you've got my vote. That is, I am a Democrat and proud of it, and I'm as active as I can be in the party. I liked what you had to say, but there was something I think is lacking. And when in Michigan, where I raised my daughter as a single parent from 9 months old until adulthood, I was interested in her schooling and in active, very active in the school system. And I was appalled when she was about in the eighth grade when I talked with her principals and others and learned that they don't really offer anything in the curriculum that could be called American history. And I don't just mean rah, 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 us, although that's okay. What's going on in Washington today, and a retired Supreme Court Justice, Stevens, recently said, we are seeing the demise of our democracy. That's not a joke, and it's not sarcasm. That it is the truth we have to face if we do not educate our children about the value that is there for us with a democracy. We don't have a democracy, I realize that. A Republican democracy, I call it. But it is democratic principles, and we have a system of government the world has admired. And we're not teaching our children, and I'm afraid that it's destroying us. Would you please comment?
Yes, and I appreciate the question, and I share your concern. My interest in government and politics and history was sparked by what I learned in the classroom and in going to the voting booth with my parents and then my own involvement with youth groups around civics and political activism as a young person. And I think we have to do a better job in teaching civics. That's kind of an old-fashioned word, but I think it's critically important that we give every student an understanding of where we are as a country, how we got here, our triumphs and our challenges, the things we've done well, and the things that we can do better. But if we don't teach those things, then we can't expect young people to support running for office or supporting candidates or believing that this country can give them the kind of life that they want. You know, I grew up believing that this country was here for me, and I want to make sure that future generations have that same feeling and that same opportunity.
Don,
yes,
thanks.
Sir.
Thanks so much for the call, Don. Appreciate it. Well, we are getting close to the end of the hour here, and we got a tweet much earlier, and I apologize. I'm just getting to this now, TJ. But TJ tweets to us, what's the biggest thing Mr. Holden would like the more conservative Southwest Florida voters to know that might lead them to choose him over Mr. Rooney?
Thank you. So I've said at least once that I'm a business person. I am a financial planner along with my wife, Streeter. And so I am, you know, to the soles of my feet, a capitalist. I love this country. I love the fact that I have the opportunity to run for office and serve in office. Not everyone has that right or opportunity. But I want people to know that I will be watching the federal budget as if it were my own, that I think deficits matter no matter which party is in power, and that I think I owe that as a duty to the people who elect me.
All right. Well, that is about all the time we have for today's program, so we are going to leave it there. But I first want to say thanks so much to our guest. We've been speaking with David Holden. He's the Democratic candidate vying to unseat Republican incumbent U.S. Representative Francis Rooney to represent Florida's 19th congressional district in the November general election. Again, that's November 6th, now less than 3 weeks away. And our invitation for Congressman Rooney to join a future edition of our show remains open. Our show today was produced by Mike Canary, myself, and Richard Chinqui. Our director, again, Richard Chinqui, and social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. David Holden, thanks again so much for being with us.
Hey, John.
Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm John Davis. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO, Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.